Hi, and welcome to The Seamless Blend, Digital Textile Dialogues with Gabby and Jorgen. Our primary purpose is to educate and initiate discussions. The opinions expressed are solely our own and do not constitute professional advice or services. We invite contributions from our audience and maintain an open community on Discord.
Hello. Welcome to season one of The Seamless Blend, where we're going to deep dive into the world of digital materials. My name is Gabby Shiner-Hill, and I am here with Jorgen Savild. We're looking forward to sharing our experiences, exploring industry trends, and looking at questions like, are people truly embracing digital materials? Are you keeping up with the latest developments? Is everyone doing it, but you're not? So a little bit about the podcast. We're launching with episode one, What Even Is a Digital Material? And we thought we'd start with, why are we doing this podcast? So why have Jorgen and I come together today? Considering, Jorgen, have we ever actually met in person?
No, we just talked about this and how we feel like we met in person. And I keep forgetting, but we've actually never met in person. And I think we realized that we met online almost 2 years ago or 1.5 years ago.
Yeah.
And we basically just kind of met around this, I guess, shared interest in digital materials and met online and reached out to each other. And suddenly now we're here. So
that's exactly. Yeah. So we've been talking about why we think this podcast needs to happen and why we're doing it together. Essentially, we both have a shared passion for digital materials and also to support the fashion and home textiles industry to become more efficient, to actually work with digital materials in a really sort of like robust and good way. Also about this podcast, why did we decide to live stream it? Well, that was to take a little bit of pressure off ourselves. I know it's a live stream, so that sounds like a lot of pressure. But for us, we wanted it to be kind of casual, actually. So it's live. We will make mistakes. We will have, say, bloopers and things like that. But actually for us, that's kind of the joy of it. A bit fun, live, hopefully engaging with the audience as well. Getting questions, asking each other's questions and answering those as well. So that's kind of like a brief introduction to the podcast. Handing over to you, Jorgen, what are we going to talk about today?
Yeah, I think it's a bit like you say, is we've had all these really great conversations. Well, basically, since we met, we've had these conversations online. Sometimes we've been going for hours and we've probably gone deeper than what we intended to where we intended to go. And then we got to this point where we just thought, okay, let's try to put some structure around it and let's just have these conversations a bit more in the open. So what we're going to be talking about today specifically is just the basic introduction. We're thinking then we want to start kind of all the way from the beginning, where we will, of course, also talk about the first season. We're planning this season to be 6 episodes for now. We're going to be doing these live streams and we're also going to be publishing this after so that you can come back and listen to them whenever you'd like to. After we've introduced a little bit more what we'll cover in this season, then we're going to go into digital product creation. And mainly the reason why we go into that is also just to bridge a bit more of kind of the digital and a physical world. That's, I think, also where we both see a lot of impact from this work that when you work digitally, it's really also just to be more efficient or be more effective or really kind of see savings in the real world. And a lot of that happens around the physical product. So just this term to become familiar with all the way from the beginning now, we'll talk about digital product creation or DPC as it's often referred to. And then we of course, come into what this episode is intended to be about, kind of like the digital materials 101. What we call this episode was just what even is a digital material. So we're just going to be talking just about kind of how do we get into it all the way from the beginning. So that's what we'll talk about in this episode.
For sure. And sharing the knowledge as well, because we know that there is some fear around digital technologies and digitizing and digital workflows. So if we can share the knowledge that we've got, so individual people and people working companies can actually start to understand what they need to do. That's, for us, is the positive and the bonus of doing this. That's why we're doing it. So we're going to start with a bit of an introduction. Shall I go first?
Yeah. I think it makes sense that we explain a little bit about who we are and what we do and why we're here. And so I can go first. So as you mentioned, my name is Jorgen Savild. I am based in Copenhagen. I currently work with a company called Bandicoot Imaging Sciences, where my job is very much also related to material digitization. Bandicoot has developed a technology where essentially with the help of a camera, you can digitize your physical fabrics and make them digital, as we'll talk a little bit more about later. A bit more background, I guess, is I've been in Hong Kong for 10 years before I moved to Denmark and to Copenhagen now about a year and a half ago. In these last 10 years, I kind of stumbled into the textiles manufacturing industry in China, first of all. I came to Hong Kong in 2012 and started working with manufacturing companies a little later on, but I stumbled into the denim industry and it just really blew my mind how much work goes into textiles.
Yeah.
I studied systems engineering at some point, and so I was interested in manufacturing and systems, and then suddenly I came out there into real life and saw.
Oh, I apologize that you're now in our industry where there's system. Yeah. But we've worked with a lot of the same companies as well. The denim companies that you worked with in Hong Kong, really big names, right? And that we've crossed over with them, quite in my background as well. So yeah, it's really interesting to hear about that. So after Hong Kong, what happened then?
Yeah, no. So I think that's where, you know, I think it just I never knew how much went into it and didn't have that much of an extensive textiles background. And like you say, now we've ended up here and we've worked with so many of the same companies. I was then in Hong Kong, and as I was moving then to Copenhagen, I also joined Bandicoot after I essentially started working with digital materials and kind of 3D in 2016. And it was in 2016 that was actually just because I have had I've been curious with technology and I just really kind of like to experiment. So in 2016, after having worked in kind of consulting roles and agency roles and worked on digital products within the textiles manufacturing industry, I brought a bunch of manufacturers together and just asked this question about, like, where are we right now with digital technologies? Are the garment manufacturers using 3D tools? Are the fabric mills digitizing fabrics? And it just didn't really seem like anyone was doing very much. It was very difficult for them to understand the technology also, just because it's quite of a complex landscape, which we hope to break down a bit in this in these discussions. And so it was really that, I think, just to almost like wrap up a bit of that's what have led me to where I am now, is that I've just gone down this pathway of worked within manufacturing and supply chain mostly, asked a lot of these questions and realized that we just don't really have solutions on the other side. And then still to this day, I was still just kind of pursuing, I think, just trying to find these right solutions and right tools for the industry and putting together this picture of this big landscape that that we all need to kind of work out.
I think it's really interesting as well that you kind of like dipped your toe in the water with denim as well, which is such a specific product area. And we know the denim industry is, they often have their own tools. You know, it's like, it's its own processes, right? You know, for a long time, I didn't work with denim. And then I did. And you suddenly realize that, you know, it's just a whole form of manufacturing just in itself. So having that grounding within denim, I think, is very interesting, because every denim company I've worked with has had a very exacting nature over their product. And the finishes and the presentation of their materials. So I think that's really interesting that that's where you started.
People are very passionate in the denim industry. But what about you, Gabby? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So, well, I'm textiles through and through. So originally a textile designer, originally a weaver, actually, if we want to go back into what I studied hand weaving. When I told my mother that I was studying hand weaving, she just was like, "What? It's 1999. You know, that's the future. Why are you studying weaving?" But for me, I was just totally interested in the construction of textiles, as opposed to the making of fashion. I was completely fascinated in materials, how to construct those textiles. So I chose weaving. From studying textile design, I then went and worked for a textile design software company, a company called Point Correct, for 4 years. And I was training designers how to basically design using one of the early CAD systems, essentially. And then I was sent down to the mills of, like, mainly in South Carolina. So like the Glen Ravens, like automotive industry, home textile industry. And that's when the mills were beginning to digitize their work processes. So designing on CAD and then having the CADs sent out to the looms. So it was the beginning of that digitization process. So 4 years doing that and a lot of travel, which was really exciting. Mm-hmm. I then ended up working for Esquel, a Hong Kong and Chinese company, manufacturer. I worked with them for a year between Hong Kong and the UK, mainly based in the UK. And then I ended up on the supply side doing product development. So I did 10 years PD, fabric sourcing, garment creation. All my customers were buyers, right? And that was significant seasonal product and significant sampling. I think you can see where I'm going with this. So iteration after iteration of samples, you know, hundreds and thousands worth of meters of textiles made for sampling process, you know, purposes, basically. So I did that for about 10 years. And I was involved in a lot of those early conversations around sustainability before it was called sustainability. So it was all about, you know, fiber choices. And this was back in 2012. So it was like fiber choices. We were looking at KPOC. We looked at lots of different things, but it wasn't called sustainability. It was just how can we have a bit less impact? So I did that for about 10 years. And then I moved into the education side because I guess, fell out of love with the cyclical nature of sampling in the supply chain. Mm. It was difficult to go from manufacturer to manufacturer. The countries, we were moving country due to cost, you know, cost pressures, you know, and to be as diplomatic as possible. It was difficult to move country, move country, move country again and again and again, build the relationships, build up that those workflows and then move on. Mm. I found that a real challenge. So I moved into education. I worked in education for 5 years, running a course at Ravensbourne University in fashion buying. And that is where my interest in 3D came in, because the fashion design course brought in Clo3D. We then brought in Clo3D. And then before you knew it, I'd started Bureau 555. We make digital twins of physical textiles. One of the technologies we use is Bandicoot, which is, you know, part of the reason we've also come together. But we use a lot of other technologies, and we're really interested in essentially tracking the impact of moving from a physical sampling workflow to a digital sampling workflow.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. It's so interesting also, you know, to hear that when you tell that summary of how you kind of also you came into this from a very almost like traditional background, and then you actually started with technology very early on, and then and you came back to it eventually. And do you feel like that has also like inspired you a little bit along the way of having known and seen technology throughout that entire journey that you've had of being a part of the industry, and then kind of had in the back of your mind or thinking like, there is this tech and we have this stuff that we could be using, or maybe early stage, and then coming like you came back to it quite a while later, and now suddenly it's like kind of time has actually made it possible with the progress that we've seen to now.
I've seen exactly as you said. I've seen it work. I've seen it on the shop floor. I've literally seen it on the factory floor, how the digital workflows can support. And I've also trained, you know, people who've worked in mills for longer than I had lived at the time, right? Their working career life and their experience and their textile experience was so much greater than anything I could have hoped to have known. But essentially, the digital technologies are not replacing textile experience. The digital technologies go alongside that. We need that textile experience. We need the textile knowledge. We need textile eyes. We need fabric technologists that understand these materials to also understand the digital workflows around it. So that I'm coming at it completely from that side, where you go physical and digital together, right?
Exactly. And that's basically also a good almost even introduction to what we're going to be talking about a bit more in this season. As we've both pointed out, that we have this manufacturing background, and we have this very close relationship and work very much with the physical product, but we also kept our eyes on technology and kind of what's out there in order to support those processes. Now a lot more of those technology a lot of those technologies are a lot more mature than before, and so that's also why I think it's much more it's a more appropriate time for us to have these conversations a bit more openly as we're trying to have here. So essentially, we put together this first season. We tried to plan a little bit, like we talked about. We're going to do this live, and we're going to do this very openly, and we're going to maybe say a few things that people disagree with or anything. And that's the whole point
of
this.
I'm sure. I have no doubt.
We want to hear back also from anyone that, you know, agrees or disagrees or anything. You know, it's an open conversation in that sense. But we tried to structure 6 episodes. So maybe we could just also briefly mention and give a little bit of an introduction to what those first 6 episodes and what the ideas roughly is. Do you want to cover?
So we're starting with this, what even is a digital material? Then we're hoping in the second episode, we're going to move into working title. What do you mean there is gravity in 3D? So that's looking at capture methods, physics, not going back to school, but physics as in physics in the 3D environment and how that affects your material and how it moves. And then also looking at the master data behind like behind the actual material. So what the information we need to package into that digital asset. So in the next episode, we're going to dive into that. Episode 3, we're going to be looking, it's a bit of an extension of a talk we've done before around workflow, expertise, and standards and integration. We're not saying we can kind of solve those three things, but it's advice around those areas. Episode 4 is, wait, is there more than Adobe out there? So it's looking at CAD tools, different design tools, like what are we using in the industry to support these digital textiles creation? And then 5 and 6, we're looking a little bit at longevity of the digital assets. Because that's really important. Like, where are our digital assets going to go? Because if we just design them into one piece of software, they don't have that longevity, and then they'll be redundant before we know it. And then the last episode, we're hoping to bring a bit of optimism to it. So where are all the positives that we're looking at in this space? Because I think when we look at introducing new technologies, it can feel like a massive sort of like barrier to get over. But both of us, I think, myself and Jorgen, we have quite a lot of joy in this space and a lot of positivity, so we want to keep that and we want to end on a high for season one.
Yeah, I think it's important to be very positive with this as well, because even though like it's some of the things are like you have to be a bit thinking into the future, a bit futuristic with it, and there's a bit of a timeline until some of these things are also gonna kind of become real, and in the process mm-hmm. of going through all yeah. this, it's important to just kind of remain optimistic with where we are today and have yeah. that joy even today. And I think that's what we both share very much in our work, is that we find, of course, a lot of frustration with trying to solve things, but there's a lot of joy in that too.
Yeah.
As long as you have that kind of curiosity and I think this desire to kind of learn and figure things out. So,
and actually, just to mention something, which is about the fact that both of us are working daily with companies that are utilizing digital materials in a number of different ways. Mm. You know, on an admin-based level, we have NDAs out there, right? So we're not going to talk about a specific company's specific method that they are doing. What we're hoping to do is to bring our experience to this podcast and to the audience. And we might refer to certain things, which, because we've built this up over, I mean, my company's been open for 2 years. We've been investigating this for 3, you know, every day is a school day. We are learning mm-hmm. continually. So I think it's that case of like taking the working in the industry and then trying to showcase some really good ideas that we've seen and some really good ways of doing it without sort of obviously giving away trade secrets.
Yes.
But then I would also say, if we don't collaborate as an industry, we're never going to get anywhere. So there we go.
Exactly. And also something we talked about is that since we're here, we're not just saying that this is a digital fashion discussion. This is kind of a digital material discussion,
yeah.
because we also would like to open up this, like kind of open it up a little bit more, that digital materials, as we'll talk about, can be used for fashion. It can be used for home textiles with interiors yeah. and furniture. It can be used in automotive. And it's also important that we learn from each other, because we have some incredible companies, for example, in the interiors and furnishing industry, where the fashion industry can learn so much just from these companies. So this is kind of like also something we're just trying to integrate into this, that it's a way that we can share and we can, I think, learn from these different sectors or industry within kind of textiles.
Yeah, and actually that's something that you brought to me in particular with this, you know, opening up into the home textile industry as well, because we know essentially curtains don't move as much as shirts, for example, right? So in that kind of space, a lot of brands have been able to digitize quicker because they have less gravity issues there. And I think another thing to mention that we're going to be focusing on is digital twins of physical products. That really is what we're going to be talking about, rather than doing a digital only creation, which we do in our company, and that is a workflow for lots of different people. But we're trying to really focus on for this season one, yeah, digital twins of physical products. So it is yes. kind of like a niche in a niche, let's say.
Exactly. And I guess that also leads us on to, I think, what this digital product creation is. And we just wanted to just talk briefly about this before we talk about digital materials, because as you mentioned, it is essentially, as it sounds, digital product creation, using kind of creating products, but assisted with digital tools. Having just a little bit of a brief kind of introduction to that. But do you want to maybe mention or talk a little bit about like what does that mean to you?
Yeah.
But like you hear digital product creation or DPC.
Sure. So DPC literally is a word that has been introduced to me, you know, as a person working in this field in the past 2 years, right? I 20 years ago, I was doing digital product creation. I had absolutely no idea that's what it was. Now that's the word we're hearing it being called at, being named as. So for us, digital product creation means all of the elements that you need to make a digital product. And we know that materials that we're talking about digital materials in this podcast, that is just one element of many other elements that make those digital products. We're going to, you know, our customers will be looking at obviously digital trends, patterns, avatars, fit, everything around that. So taking your, imagine like your, tech pack on steroids, essentially, you are, instead of having your flat sketch, it's everything around that in a digital environment. And we can even think about it all the way through into ERP systems and to PLM, how we're delivering that information. It's not just like creating the physical assets. It's the entire digitization process around it, which involves the entire company, which I think is some of the barriers we keep on hitting, is that people don't understand that you have to involve IT in these discussions. You have to involve finance in these discussions. Every single business unit needs to be on board with digital product creation. So yeah, that's what it means to me.
I think that's a really good point, like, you know, that it's not just like digital product creation doesn't just touch upon, it's just not just design and development, it's no. really bigger than that. And I guess also to take a step back into where a lot of digital materials are used, and we're going to talk a bit about this also, but of course, like, digital material could go into different streams. Like, you could digitize a material and then use that material in a visualization that's used for marketing and for sales, or, you know, to create images in e-commerce and so forth. You could be, for example, like also creating a digital material from a physical one, creating some kind of digital clothing or products, and then you could put them in video games or the metaverse, or create NFTs. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have talked about in the recent years. And DPC is kind of like this other stream where the materials then goes into this workflow. And we'll talk a bit about this also, about, you know, it depends on which different product you're trying to make. How you then set up a workflow, where what does your material go into? It's a bit almost like manufacturing in a digital sense, so that we're creating physical products but assisted with these digital technologies. And as we've seen in manufacturing, it's not just one factory that does it all in most cases. Even though you have some examples of that too, but in most cases you have one factory that spins the yarn, another one that weaves the fabric, and then another one that cuts and sews the garments and so forth. So digital is also laid out in a similar way, where you have these workflows and these pipelines of different softwares and processes that you go through. So it's important to just I think separate that out as a, I guess, call it a bit of a scope of what we'll talk more specifically about. And I think in particular in this season and in the podcast in general.
Yeah, and you mentioned it obviously being, it is a manufacturing workflow, and then something that I always think about is we don't want to bring in the mistakes we've made in our manufacturing workflows into this digital workflow as well. There's a tendency just to want to create the same process digitally because that's what we understand. And actually, we have done that. We have done that as well in the past with our company, because that's what we understand. But we should be looking for the wins. We should be looking for the efficiencies. It's not the cutting corners. It's looking for the efficiencies to make it usable for us as people working in this industry. You know, that's going to be really important to think about as well.
Exactly.
So we're moving.
I think we'll talk a bit about digital materials, but I think some of the really interesting things just to quickly mention on that was also this, this has a lot to I think this means a lot to the industry as we see it as a whole in terms of business model and how everything transforms. So it's, you know, we've called the podcast almost like the digital materials and more about textiles. It's all rooted back in that. We're always going to come back to that, but it's really talking about how industries and companies can really kind of change in the future in ways that we haven't really been able to do before. So I think that was a bit of background, and I think we should get into the kind of what even is a digital material, and maybe cover some of those basics.
Well maybe I could start with that one. So what even is a digital material? Well, the first thing is the word digital is just massive, right? What does that even mean, digital? If I talk to people about 3D materials, people often say, oh, so you're 3D printing materials. No, it's not clear actually, because the terminology we're using is not clear. So when we are talking about digital materials on this podcast, and when we're talking about it within our business, we do mean, as I say, a digital version of a physical material. Now, what does that digital twin mean? It's not just a photograph. It's not just a flat image of that material. It's not just an iPhone photo or a JPEG of that material. It's actually layered, right? And we're going to talk about this in capture methods, but a digital material is made up, as we consider it, this is what Jorgen and I would consider a digital material, is made up of three parts. The first part is the image, right? And then the textural images around that, the maps, this is what they're called, right? If anyone in the audience is listening, maps, shaders, PBR, all of this kind of stuff, right? It's basically a layer cake. And you have all your different maps will essentially tell the software that the material is in how light reflects off of it. And how it's, that's, you know, on a really basic level, apologies to all of the games designers out there, but that's essentially what it is. So you've got the image-based size, the texture-based side of the digital material. Then you've got the physics. So the physics is actually how the material moves in a 3D environment. So I remember someone saying to me, well, how are you testing your physics? And I'm like, my physics? What is my physics? Literally, it's how that material moves. It's the bending, the elongation. It's the, as we would understand, it's drape in a 3D environment. So we're going to investigate lots of different ways that we can do that. And then the third thing that we would consider makes it a real digital asset is then that master data around that material, which is wrapped up in a package around it. So that could be as simple as, you know, name, cost, MOQ, country of origin, supplier, that side. Or it can go much deeper into impact assessment, which we'll talk about in a second. So from our side, that's what a digital material is. Three things. So texture, it's the physics, and it's the data. So then who are using digital materials, Jorgen?
Yeah, good. I actually had a very interesting conversation this week. I thought about when you were just explaining this, and I met a doctor, and I was explaining to this doctor what I was doing, a medical doctor, and I was explaining, you know, what I was doing. And the first thing that this doctor said, because we were talking about, and I was explaining it as you can capture data, you can capture something that's physical, and then you can bring that into a digital environment. And now you can simulate, you can suddenly now see, for example, like how something would look like if you were to then, you know, do something with that data. This was a bit like deep into a conversation. And then he suddenly said, oh, this is kind of like what I do when I take blood from patients. You know, I take this blood and we take it to the lab, and then we get all these numbers and all these different things. And then we run them up against, a whole chart of ranges and what the normals are like. And then once you have enough data, then we can then simulate that data. And then I can build models and I can do all these different things in a digital environment. I can then kind of get an idea of what would happen to this person if I were to run a certain treatment on them. And it was just such a really, like, I just really liked how this person
runs wearer trials on the people's blood.
Exactly. Rather than like risking to damage an actual human, you can just run some simulations on the screen with some of the data that you can capture, and then, you know, do all things with it without actually having to even affect the human, and with much better chance of being successful than come back to the physical product. And I think that's very much also to me what digital materials are like. And it was just a really good example that I kind of came across this week when I was talking about it. But as you said, who are these companies or these people that use these digital materials? It's as we talked about, very much different industries: fashion, furniture, interior, automotive. Essentially, industries that make product. I think we both work very much in fashion. So we see that in fashion, we have the brands. You have global, international brands or local brands, where you then have designers that work with. Bridging a bit more, you know, what the market is interested in and what, you know, people that buy fashion would like to buy and design something that is for them. You have developers who is then a little bit more concerned with, you know, the engineering or how do we actually get this product made and manufactured. So you got that brand side of it, and they use digital materials in their day-to-day job then to kind of take these digital versions of a physical material, bring them into the software and these different workflows, and then kind of simulate, like we say simulate like it's something very scientific, but it's essentially, for anyone that works with digital design tools, it's kind of like, you know, you bring something into this digital design space and then you move it around and you do certain things with it digitally so that you don't have to waste physical materials. And so you got the brands, and then you got those kind of retail companies, and of course the supply side, which I I think we're also going to come back to a lot more later on with the supply side is then the long side of the, let's say, the fabric mills where the fabrics are manufactured and then they're shipped onto the garment company. And that's a way, for example, then for a fabric mill to digitize the fabric, you know, as the fabric comes out of a fabric mill, we create a digital version of that material at the fabric mill. And rather than sending samples or shipping physical product around the world for prototyping and these things, we could then ship a digital material and you could have it, you know, from China or Bangladesh or anywhere where manufacturing is big. And you can have that in New York or London or wherever, where the designers are sitting in a split second compared to having to ship samples around the world. So this is kind of one, I think one side of the people that are using digital materials daily,
No, I was just going to say, to speak to the point about not sending samples or hangers around the world. That's actually, it's entirely why our business started with myself and Nusrat, because during the pandemic, working with the mill, we were actually stuck because we had no way to get our materials out there. So we created a virtual showroom, but the resolution and fidelity, it just wasn't good enough. So we ended up investigating material capture options, which is why we're sat here 3 years later doing this.
Exactly. And also a great segue to what we talked about, kind of like the big question, I think the deepest one of all is really why. And like you say, you do this really in very much close to manufacturing. So, you know, why do we do this, Gabby?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of different whys. A why from our business is to reduce waste within the textile industry. Reduce sampling waste is the biggest reason why we started our business, why we've invested in these technologies, and why we're continuing to push digital materials, because of the excessive physical sampling that happens in our industry. We want to reduce that and be able to visualize those garments in a 3D sample format before you go into full range planning. So that's on our side, why. Why would brands and manufacturers be incentivized to use digital materials? Essentially, on the business case, it's around reducing time, obviously. So speed to market. If you can visualize something, if you've got your prepared for dye material sat in Bangladesh, let's say, for example, and you can give a new color and get that dyed up in 10 days and get the garments made out. If you can visualize that all in 3D, you're cutting down your time dramatically. There is an element of cost saving as well, but I think we have to caveat cost and digital materials with understanding that digitizing your workflow comes with a large element of change management, changing ways of working, investment in technology, investment in people, and training of people. So yes, high value products like technical outerwear and tailoring work really well in a 3D environment because they're very expensive to actually physically sample. Whereas I have been challenged by businesses who would say, well, I've got a £5 t-shirt. It's definitely not in my interest to do this digitally. Well, I could just get my factory to make it. I'm not trying to play devil's advocate. It's just that thing. Cost is a real driver. But are you going to get an immediate cost reduction? You have to look at the actual return on investment much deeper down that workflow.
And I think that's probably even something that deserves an episode or even a season of its own. Like we could have
a whole episode of ROI.
Come in and talk about this. But it is like you say, and I think what we're seeing even from a technology point of view, we're trying to say, you know, okay, we've got this great technology and you can very quickly and very easily and very flexibly and very scalably and all sorts of, you know, benefits from it, digitize materials and then create this digital twin of your material. But it's also, if you do that, I think what we've seen a lot of cases of is that companies fail to actually eliminate or take away the old way of doing things while they're doing things digital. And it's an ongoing process. So you also need to give that time. I think that like that time element needs to be there so that you can establish digital methods of doing what you've used to do physically. And then you can transition over and slowly get rid of some of those physical ways of doing things and the old ways of doing things. And that's also something related to cost. So
I completely agree. But I mean, following on from the cost conversation, if we think about potential impact, a positive impact of digital materials, a lot of what we've been investigating and I've been looking at for the past 6 months is how digital materials can start to feed into the European legislation, right? I'm not going to dive into it, but around the eco design for sustainable products regulation leading into the digital product passports. If you are creating a digital twin and a physical textile. If you are not putting in the impact data from the very beginning, you're going to at some point have to retrospectively put that data in. So it makes sense to build it from the beginning and build it up and send it out. And I feel very, very strongly about this, and I keep on banging on about it. Because how do we incentivize people to change, right? We're humans. Humans don't like change. They don't want to change, right? So how do we incentivize it? There has to be a reason behind it. So looking at that impact and how digital materials can be part of that positive impact, I think is a really important area we're going to talk about.
It is, yeah. And I think even coming back to, like, you know, why we decided to talk, so like, kind of even ground this in digital materials is this element of just, why don't we start all the way at the bottom? I know that we could go down to fiber, and we could go into farming and how you produce synthetic fibers and so forth, and we could go further upstream. But it's really that, like, at where we are right now, it makes sense to digitize your materials, and the technology is really available, mm-hmm. and it's possible to do this at this, and you don't have to be a scientist to really go into it. So it makes sense to just get started with this. And also, it's important to start in this end so that you can build upwards, or you can kind of like build up to the final product. But if you start all the way at the top, then you're starting to almost like break things apart or re-engineer how you got to making that product in the first place. And you're then going to have to retrace a lot of that data or add that data in later on, exactly. rather than if you just kind of started with the data all the way from the beginning,
exactly.
and then that data was just followed through. And I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about this in particular, blockchain technologies and things that are related to this, traceability and transparency are related elements into this. And my favorite, I think, also element of almost why digital materials, and we're talking about this space, other than cost, speed, the reduction of waste and some of the kind of core elements we talked about, is I think that fashion in particular, I know we talk about different industries here, and I think this applies to all of them, but we're looking at a shift in business models where digital technologies, in a similar way to how we moved from retail into, you know, more e-commerce, has just shifted how business is working. And I think we're going to see a major shift in how companies, especially brands and retailers, can build completely new business models by leveraging technology that is now becoming more and more sophisticated. And you can just essentially compete as a brand or as a retail business in completely new ways. For example, on-demand manufacturing that becomes more easy. You mentioned even PLM and ERP systems, and just how you manage data and how available that mm-hmm. becomes. The way we talk about product personalization and customization, these are things that really affect the business model for everyone that are involved in supply chain and retail brand side. And lots of, I think,
there's a lot to, I'm really conscious of time as well, because our aim was to keep this between 20 and 30 minutes. So I think that we're going to make it, this is our introduction, right? Next ones, we're going to aim for like 20, 25 minutes. Let's be kind to ourselves, right? There's a couple of things before we wrap up, which is the one thing we do just want to address is the elephant in the room, which is hand feel when it comes to digital materials. We do not have a solution for you for hand feel. We don't have a haptic glove that we can give, unfortunately, out, which would be great. So we have to understand that digital materials will not be replacing the physical materials entirely. But if I can just say one thing to this, which was when people talk to me about hand feel, I then say to the brands or manufacturers, so with the products that you are creating, how much newness do you create every season, right? Well, it's 80% core and it's 20% newness. 80% of your product is core product. Then why do you need a feeler of it every year in a hanger? Just saying, right? We're always... hand feel's super important. I'm a textile person. I'm physical textiles through and through. But we have to remember how much is never out of stock or a rebuy. Right. Exactly. So I haven't answered the hand feel.
Exactly. And like you say, we're not, and I think this is almost a good way to even end this conversation for now. We're going to, of course, come back to this in the upcoming episodes. But it's important to just emphasize that we are not saying that we're digitizing materials and then putting them the physical materials away, and then we're not going to have to see them again. We're talking about this kind of, everything we're talking about is how physical materials and digital materials go hand in hand, and they're used together. And we're not taking the physical product away. People are going to need clothes to wear, and they need to be physical. They can't be digital in the real world. So
not yet.
There's some just to kind of.
Excellent. So I guess that's wrapping up. Do you want to end with the final little bits then?
As we talked a bit about already, this is the first time we're doing this. We would like to continue to do it. We are trying to structure this. Of course, now we've just done this in the best way that we could. We're trying to structure this. Yes. Well, also, but we're trying to do this in a way where, of course, it's hard to bring the entire world or the community or you know, anyone who's interested always, you know, into a conversation like this, just on the way that we're having a conversation. So I think, you know, we will very much be having this conversation, but we do want to, you know, facilitate or initiate some kind of community around it. We have set up a Discord channel. So yeah, we're going to be putting a link to that in descriptions on YouTube or podcasts or wherever you can find it. For those of you that don't know Discord, it's just kind of like a mixture of a forum and almost like a chat room and a place where we can all come together. Of course, some ground rules with that, which we'll cover on Discord. But of course, just we want that to be a friendly place for all of us to just have these conversations together. And we would like to also pick up on, you know, what you who's listening is thinking about this. What kind of questions do you have? What do you want to know more about? What should we, you know, be talking about? Should we be bringing people into this conversation from the outside? Anything that you can think of, feel free to just, you know, tell us about it on Discord. Feel free to use, there's going to be, when we do these live streams, one of the reasons why we did that, because then we can actually address things even live. So feel free to use live chats and so forth on the platforms that we're live streaming on. And we're just going to try to kind of make this open and, yeah, and kind of easy to get into. Anything that you want to add to that, Gabby?
No, just saying I'm looking forward to the engagement. And I like a bit of Discord, so that's all good.
Yeah, yeah. So feel free to join us on Discord, sign up, participate, connect with us, you know, directly as well, if you feel like it's easier to just speak to us directly. But we'd love to hear what everyone thinks. So thanks a lot for listening in. And
I guess the last thing to say is that episode 2 is going to be how our digital materials made.
Yes.
Yeah, so we look forward to that. So thank you. Thanks, Jorgen. It's been really fun.
Very fun. All right. See you next time.
All right.
Bye. Thank you for listening to The Seamless Blend. If you enjoyed today's discussion, feel free to subscribe. We also invite you to connect with us and participate in our discussions on Discord. Let us know if you agree, disagree, or have any questions. Until next time, take care.